week in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sporty greetings. This is Victor Osimhen, Super Eagles of Nigeria and Napoli FC forward. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Victor Osimhen scored 4 goals and the Super Eagles of Nigeria routed Sao Tome and Principe Monday 10-0 in a qualifying match for the 2023 Africa Cup of Nations football tournament in Ivory Coast. The result in Morocco was a record margin of victory for Nigeria. It surpassed a 10-1 win over Benin in 1959. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with the chief football writer at ACLSports.com. Fisayo Dairo.
It is always refreshing to see your team, your beloved team, win football games and win them emphatically. Nigeria Super Eagles have not won in their last 5 matches before they defeated Sierra Leone and Abuja last weekend. So the 10-0 drubbing of Sao Tome and Principe on Monday, yes, we could easily say that they played some sort of minnows in African football, but it gives them 6 maximum points from qualifying for AFCON next year. So it's always a good feeling. It's a welcome development for the fans. I'm sure the players loved it so much. They enjoyed it among themselves. They celebrated each goal. You know, a number of the players scored for the national team for the first time ever. Likes of Emmanuel Dennis, Terry Murphy, Ademola Lookman. So these results is simply very good for the team, for team spirit, for bonding, and for good vibes.
With this victory, especially the big scoreline, Nigeria leads Group A of the qualifying series. When will they play their next game?
I do believe that the wins over Sierra Leone and Sao Tome and Principe will put Nigeria in a perfect stead ahead of their upcoming games against Guinea-Bissau in September. Yeah, the Super Eagles will be facing their West African opponents starting from the 18th of September, first in Abuja, before the second fixture, also in Morocco in September. Those two fixtures will be key in determining if Nigeria will finish tops of Group A. Yes, the top 2 teams will qualify for the AFCON, but for a team with the pedigree and the kind of image that the Super Eagles have, they do want to finish top of the group. And I'm sure those 2 games will be very, very crucial in doing that. Yes, they are top of the group with 11 plus goals difference, with 6 maximum points. But those 2 games against the team, I believe, are perhaps the most difficult team in the group. I haven't seen what they did against the Super Eagles in Garua at the AFCON in January. I'm sure the Super Eagles know what to expect against the West African opponents.
Fesayo, do you think Nigerian fans will be happy with the playing philosophy of coach Jose Peseiro?
Fans of the Super Eagles do know that it is early days for the new head coach Jose Peseiro. He has taken up the team from their very lowest ebb, failure to advance from the second round at AFCON in January, and then failure to qualify for the World Cup finals. But the Portuguese has come on board, lost his first 2 games, friendly games in the United States. Now he has won his first 2 competitive games. I think they have every reason to look forward to great things. And more importantly, he seemed to favor the 4-4-2 formation that brought Nigeria huge success back in the 1990s, 94, 96. So it seemed to be the traditional way of playing football in Nigeria, although tactical evolution in previous years seemed to have brought back the 4-3-3 and 4-2-3-1 shades. But under Peseiro, even against Sierra Leone in Abuja when they won 2-1 on Thursday, it was all-out attack for the team. That is the kind of team that Nigerians want to associate with. And again, against Sao Tome, they didn't say it's a little-known country. They went all-out and scored as much as 10 goals, only for the second time ever. That was since 1959. So the fans have every reason to be optimistic for greater things. They have every reason to like the philosophy and the dynamism that Peseiro is also exuding in his games. Sometimes he changes the formation to a 3-man midfield, sometimes 3 men at the back. All in all, it's the early days, but like I said earlier, fans have every reason to be optimistic and to be hopeful for greater things from the Super Eagles.
That's Fisayo Dairo, the chief football writer at ACLSports.com. And Fisayo spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Abuja, Nigeria. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
In another 2023 Africa Cup of Nations qualifying match Monday, Guinea-Bissau and Sierra Leone played to a 2-2 draw. The game was played in Conakry, Guinea, after Sierra Leone's home stadium was ruled not ready to host matches. Guinea-Bissau took a 2-0 lead on goals by Jorginho in the 49th and 52nd minutes. Sierra Leone equalized on goals by Augustus Kargbo in the 78th minute and Moussa Camara in the 87th minute. Guinea-Bissau now trails front-running Nigeria by 2 points in Group A, while Sierra Leone is 5 points behind the Super Eagles. And in Group K of 2023 Africa Cup of Nations qualifying, the Atlas Lions of Morocco maintained their perfect start with a 2-0 victory over Liberia in Casablanca. Faikal Fajir scored on a penalty kick in the 56th minute, and Morocco's other goal came 4 minutes later from Youssef En-Nesyri. The Moroccans now have the maximum 6 points in the group, while Liberia has no points. In a 2022 World Cup qualifying match Monday, Australia beat Peru 5-4 on penalty kicks to book a ticket to football's premier event. The intercontinental playoff match was held in Qatar, which will host the World Cup in November. Now, Australia and Peru failed to score in regulation and extra time, setting up the penalty kick shootout. Goalkeeper Andrew Redmayne was the big hero for the Socceroos of Australia. Redmayne was sent on as a substitute in the closing seconds of extra time, and he saved the last penalty shot from Peru's Alex Valera. And another hero for Australia was winger Awer Mabil, who was born to South Sudanese parents in a Kenyan refugee camp. The 26-year-old Mabil scored on Australia's 6th penalty kick, and afterwards, he said his penalty shot was a thank you to Australia that took his family in after they fled the conflict in Sudan. Australia will be in Group D at the World Cup, along with Tunisia, Denmark, and defending champion France. Fisayo Dairo, the chief football writer at ACLSports.com, says it will be a tough group for the Carthage Eagles of Tunisia.
When you consider the strength and the quality of the Carthage Eagles of Tunisia, you would think that they are in a little bit more difficult group. Why? It's because they have two strong European sides in their group. The Le Bleu, two-time champions of the world, France, and Denmark, who also have a pretty decent record of at least getting to quarterfinal stages at the World Cup here in their group. So it's going to be very difficult for them. France are the defending champions of this one, and they still boast of some of the top footballing talents in the world, likes of Kylian Mbappe, likes of Paul Pogba, likes of Karim Benzema, and so on and so forth. And for the Danes as well, they are a very tactical and technical side, and you do fear for Tunisia, I must say. So I think negotiating the ties against the two Europeans will be the major concern for the Tunisians. They have not really been in the best kind of form in the past couple of years as well, and I'm sure Tunisians back home will be worried with this kind of group they've been drawn into.
That's Fisayo Dairo, the chief football writer at ACLSports.com. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. And this note for our VOA listeners, our programs have moved to voaafrica.com. There you will find your favorite VOA TV and radio programs, including the Sunny Side of Sports and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Thanks, David. That's David Vandy, the host of the VOA's African Beat music show. On the basketball beat, the Golden State Warriors beat the visiting Boston Celtics Monday night 104-94 to take a 3-2 lead in the NBA Finals. The AP's Ryan Leong reports from San Francisco, California.
Andrew Wiggins scored 26 points and pulled down 13 rebounds as the Warriors beat the Celtics 104-94.
So I came in here and just, you know, hoop. You know, I'm playing basketball and I'm playing hard, you know, and I feel like people respect that. And I'm just trying to win, you know, at the end of the day, you know, no matter what it takes, whatever they need from me, I'm here to help win.
Klay Thompson added 21 points, making 5 threes.
Feels good, but we haven't done anything yet. And the mission still is the same. And we're all eager to get to Boston and play a great game on Thursday.
Stephen Curry had 16 points and 8 assists. Golden State is now 1 win away from its 4th NBA title in 8 seasons. The Celtics came back down 12 points at the half to take a 5-point lead in the third quarter. But the Warriors bounced back in the fourth to go up by 16. In the loss, Jason Tatum had 27 points.
We ain't got to win 2 in one day. We just got to win one game on Thursday. And we've been in this situation before. So, you know, it's not over. We just got to win on Thursday, and that's all we got to worry about right now.
Ryan Leong, San Francisco.
Thanks, Ryan. Star guard Steph Curry had a poor shooting night for the Warriors. For the first time in 133 career playoff games, Steph failed to make a three-point shot. In fact, he missed all 9 of his three-point attempts in Game 5 and was 7-for-22 from the field. Curry comments.
I mean, of course, it bothers me as a shooter. You want to impact the game that way, but thankfully, that's not the only thing that you do out there on the court. I remember the first game of the year against the Lakers, I had a very similar like shooting night, but impacted the game other ways. And I remember I said like I played horrible, but I had to kind of define what that looked like in terms of just trying to make the right play, keep things simple. And the fact that, you know, everybody stepped up, Wiggs, JP, you know, Klay hit some big shots. Draymond found his life and his spirit and the way he impacts the game. We could withstand going 9-for-40 as a team and me 0-for-9 and still come away with the win. So obviously, track record says, you know, we'll shoot the ball better next game. And looking forward to that bounce back.
Meanwhile, the Boston Celtics have to bounce back with a win on Thursday, or their season is over. Boston's head coach, Ime Udoka, has this message for his team heading into Game 6.
Well, feeling the message to the guys is to be confident going home, get your rest, and then let's get ready to bring it back here. And so for us, it's really about consistency. And that's the thing we're not having throughout a full game. It's a consistent effort, sustained effort, more so offensively than anything. And so that's the part where we got to have carry over from quarter to, not only game to game, but even quarter to quarter, like we saw in the third, and then it doesn't happen in the fourth. So obviously we're all frustrated with tonight a little bit, but even prior, you know, quarters and games. And so our message is to take it one at a time. We've been here before and did it against Milwaukee, and let's bring it back out to the Bay.
That's Boston Celtics head coach Ime Udoka. The Celtics will host the Golden State Warriors on Thursday night in Game 6 of the NBA Finals. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world.
Rain on me.
Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Thanks, Larry. That's Larry London, a man who's always ready to cross musical borders. I encourage our Sunny Side of Sports listeners to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. Once again, my Twitter handle, @VOA Sunny Sports.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
The United States will host the World Athletics Championships next month in the northwest U.S. city of Eugene, Oregon. The championships are scheduled from July 15th to July 24th. One of the international runners who is hoping to win a medal in Eugene is the Scottish athlete Josh Kerr, who won a bronze in the men's 1500 meters last year at the Tokyo Olympics. The energetic Andy Edwards caught up with Josh recently at the Birmingham Diamond League meet in England. Here's Andy.
Josh Kerr has really emerged in the last couple of seasons, Olympic bronze in the 1500 in Tokyo last year. And Josh, I wanted to think about that, not just harking back to Tokyo, but I wonder, are there athletes who are really are championship performers, and without denigrating performances on the circuit, when you come to a championship with qualifying rounds, do you need something more, both physically and mentally?
To be honest, it's difficult because every athlete is so individual. And so as a crowd, as a fan, as the media, like, you have this cookie cutter kind of like opinion on people when they do certain performances. And so for me, you know, I don't really fit into that. I like to race minimally, and I like to race really, really well. Like, I want to go after records. I want to go after, you know, fast times and hard races. And I don't do that very often because my body can't handle doing that week in, week out, and I can't put that performance on all the time. So for me to get ready for, you know, for the Olympics, it was like, don't do a lot, but when the ones that you do them really well. And you build confidence from that, and then you go from there. And so that's me, but someone different can have a totally different situation. And that's just all part of track and field, and that's what we've got to accept. And instead of, you know, that's what the NCAA taught me, that, you know, maybe I can't run every single week really well. So I was like, why don't I strip back and try and just run really well every month or so, every 3 weeks, whatever it is. So that's just my way of doing it. It's been working so far, so I'm not changing.
You mentioned the NCAA, the American collegiate system, and you came through that in the sense of getting to international standard. Did that require adjustment on your part coming from Britain?
So, I mean, obviously I was born and raised here. I was here till I was 17, and I feel like I was a pretty good athlete when I left. And, you know, I was able to touch up a couple of things. And I think the British style of racing really does well in the U.S. because I think it's slightly different. We're more aggressive. We like to go for it. And it got me a couple titles, and so I was happy with that. But I mean, I learned my craft in the UK, and I just brought it to the US and kind of challenged those US athletes over there. And yeah, it helped me with racing a lot. It helped me with racing really good talent week in, week out. And I think that's what we're lacking a little bit here in the UK through the university system. So I went over there and took advantage of what the US had, and I was able to get to the world stage from there.
And with the Olympic bronze behind you, I mean, how has the build-up to this outdoor season gone?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I had a fantastic winter. I enjoyed myself, and I was able to enjoy that medal and bring it back to family, friends, and my sponsor, Brooke. So, yeah, we had a really good time with that. But now it's like, what's next? What's bigger? What's better? And that's winning a world championship. So that's the next goal.
That Scottish runner, Josh Kerr. And Josh spoke with the energetic Andy Edwards in Birmingham, England. Another athlete to watch at the World Championships next month is American Sydney McLaughlin, the Olympic champion and world record holder in the women's 400 meters hurdles. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports feature presentation, VOA's Gwen Ooten looks back on McLaughlin's world record performance in Tokyo last year.
The two American hurdlers, gold medalist Sydney McLaughlin and silver medalist Dalila Muhammad, ran the race of their lives, with both women breaking the world record in a thrilling race to the finish. Champion Sydney McLaughlin beat her own world record that she set in June at the U.S. Olympic trials, where she became the first woman to break the 52-second barrier in the 400-meter hurdles. McLaughlin told reporters her new world record of 51.46 seconds was achieved with the help of a very fast track.
I definitely say it's a fast track. You can feel a difference, it being Mondo and everything. I don't know how to really describe it. A lot of people talked about the shoes, but I do think it's just one of those tracks. It gives you that energy right back and pushes you and propels you forward.
She was only 17 when she made her Olympic debut at the 2016 Rio Games, where she had an impressive start but failed to reach the final.
I think it's really important to focus on the things that you can control. And I think for me personally, what's really helped is my relationship with God. It's given me a perspective to deal with a lot of those emotions that the world throws at you. In terms of people who are struggling with it, I do feel for them, because this is a really hard thing to do, to be at this high level and have to compete with the whole world watching you. So I feel for them and I pray for them, and I just hope that everybody can get to a place where they can get back to enjoying what they love to do.
Silver medalist Dalila Muhammad also ran a personal best with a time of 51.58 seconds. She won gold in the 400-meter hurdles in Rio, and all eyes were on Muhammad in Tokyo as she prepared to defend her title. And after the race, she told reporters she feels no disappointment with second place.
Kudos to Sydney for winning. That was absolutely amazing, and nothing to take away from her. But, I think in general, just we as a society need to celebrate all of the accomplishments that are made and be happy with the accomplishments that you make within yourself. And to just be sitting here 1, 2, 3 with crazy fast times is just an accomplishment in itself. So I'm truly proud of that. No mixed emotions here today. There's always things that you want to do better just as an athlete, as a competitor. There's small little checkups that I felt that I could have done better in that race, but it's not me beating myself up because it didn't happen on an Olympic, gold performance, but just me going back to that checking board and thinking, okay, I might have another opportunity to do so. So using this race as just that motivation for the next, then yeah, I'm super happy with it today. And this is not my last race of my career.
Sydney McLaughlin has said competing against Alila Muhammad goes much deeper than a rivalry. She said iron sharpens iron. It's two people pushing each other to be their best. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden. Some Ghanaian fighters have become the best in boxing by honing their skills in the country's gyms. Yawafusu Larbi tells us more.
Boxing, the country's pride. It is a sport that has brought incredible amounts of joy to the people of Ghana. From DK Poison, who won the first world title in 1975, to Emmanuel Tego, Ghana has an incredible pedigree in the sport. With 10 boxing world champions, 4 Olympic medalists, and a busload of Commonwealth and African title winners, Ghana can make a claim as one of Africa's top countries in the sport. DK Poison puts Ghana on the map, but the man who actually kept Ghana's name at the top was Azuma Nelson.
McKenny steps in and it's all over! It's all over! It's going to be in the South.
Nelson, as well as DK Poison, all began at the Akotoku Boxing Gym in the heart of the boxing-crazy suburb of Accra, Bukom. Akotoku is an open-air boxing gym that has produced one too many boxers, many of whom look up to the greats the boxing gym has produced. In dire conditions here, champions are made. No pain, no guts, no gain, no glory is the inscription on the walls of the Atokwashi Boxing Gym at the foot of the Gulf of Guinea in Jamestown. Founded in 1981, the gym has become one of the most distinguished boxing gyms in the country. It has produced the likes of WBC International and Commonwealth Middleweight Champion James Obedetoni, former Commonwealth Super Middleweight Champion Charles the Crusader Adamu, former two-time Bantamweight Champion Joseph Agbeko, and Joshua the Hitter Clote. Joseph Agbeko has a record of 43 fights with 38 wins, 5 losses, and 28 knockouts to his name. Agbeko tells the story of how he started and how he got to the top. He highlights the gyms he started in, how he settled at the Atokwashi gym, and how he managed to shape his professional career.
Atokwashi is where I settled. That's where the late coach Aloe started training me. Coach Adama, who was at my corner when I won the world championship, that was when they all started training me. In the gym, there's a lot of motivation in the gym. Not financially or anything, but people are there every day living their job, living everything they are doing to come and watch you, to come and boost your morale so you can work hard. But whenever we get outside the country and we are fighting for Ghana, we don't think about anything apart from Ghana. It is not only by the skill that we get or the training that we've trained, all that plays a part, but the major one that plays part is thinking about your home and what will happen to them when you win and what they will do to you if you lose. And that is the biggest motivation that has, kept me going.
King Kong Agbeko reflects also on how Ghanaians hailed him when he won his first title belt after he defeated Luis Alberto Perez in 2007.
And the feeling, the feeling from when I won my first title, it was something else because when I won in the ring, I can't believe it because that has been my dream from the beginning. When we went back to our hotel, I actually slept with my belt because my belt was my girlfriend. It was lying beside me because this is what I've been dreaming of from day one that I decided to be a boxer. When you win a title, our people, Ghanaians, they will always celebrate you.
From Bukom in Accra, this is Yawafusu Larbi for the Sunny Side of Sports.
And that wraps up the June 14th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington.
I get it.
And that's the sunny side of sports!